Tonight we're continuing on, as you're well aware, of our passages series, and tonight we have Jeff Peterson here, who just disappeared. He's back there at the back. That was weird for a moment. we've prayed so long. Where did he go? It's going to be great, and we're looking forward to it. He's no stranger around here, so let's welcome Pastor Jeff to this stage for our interview tonight. Twist it. You got it? Sure. Okay, he said, "I can explain." Pastor Jeff just had arthroscopic knee surgery a few weeks ago, and his knee, just before he came here, he had it drained, and so his knee, when it's in this position, it seems to...
There you go. That's so nice.
That's thank what you. That's for.
I didn't know about this thing.
That's
so
really cool. So anyway, welcome. It's good to be
thank
here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Hi, everybody.
Yeah. This look at this. Awesome. That's awesome. Well, this is going to be a great night, and I have a lot of questions. I put this out on Facebook today, and I've had several emails, and I just want to give you an idea of what kind of questions I've got. Most of them are extremely intelligent. I just thought I'd say that. Okay, can God use a person if their favorite team is a sun devil? Jake the Snake, really? Well, I don't really understand what that is.
That's very good. Jake Plummer, former quarterback, led him to the against Ohio State Rose Bowl 1997. They lost in the last seconds. Thought I'd mention that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good. Do you know what cashew chicken is?
I do. I went to CBC.
Oh, that's right. That's sure. Sure. Yeah. Sure.
By the way, is BBC Pizza still around? Ah, used to love that. Like 26 cents a slice. It was incredible.
Social media, is it vital for the church's future, or is it just another distraction for Pastor Mike to miss his 1 a.m. prayer time? For the love, drop it. It's done. Okay, so anyway, there were some there that just came in, and then I thought this one was good, too. This one came in just today. On Facebook, Pastor Jeff, you mentioned after prayerful selection of candidates, your church casts lots for church deacons. Should we cast lots to see if Pastor Mike should stick around? dead serious. So thanks a lot for the affirmation. So just kidding. And this one's getting a little bit more serious. Is it true, because I think it's serious, is it true that your uncle was a WWF wrestler?
Look at me. What do you think? Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Seriously, I got the.
If you saw my mom and my dad Sunday, my mom's baby brother of five siblings was handsome Jimmy Valiant, the Boogie Woogie Man.
And I think we have a picture.
Huh? A few of you know who he is? That's him. That's him.
There's another one.
That was him later in his life. That was when he was
a little
bit younger.
Really good friends. He sent
Jimmy Valiant story. That's it. Look at you.
Yeah.
I love that. That's my uncle.
Yeah,
he's a lunatic, but it's great.
I thought that was interesting.
Actually, he's reading his Bible almost every day now. He's in his early 60s, and he has a, up in the hills of the Carolina Hills, he has a wrestling school, and he takes about 7 to 12 guys and teaches them wrestling, and wow. I'm not one of them, obviously.
Oh. So, yeah. Well, we know what tornado sirens are. We know, you may not be familiar with what an ice storm is, but I guess you went to CBC here, but I was wondering if you could help us out. I had several people ask this question. If you could help us define what some weathermen call dry heat. What is dry heat?
Piece of cake. How many of you know what dry heat is? How many of you do not know what dry heat is? All right, I can illustrate it. Let's see. Best I could illustrate it would be the year my parents moved to Phoenix 10 years ago, and they came in June, and we went to General Council in August, and Council was in Orlando, Florida. And so my parents lived in Phoenix, which is dry heat, June, July, into August, and then we ran down to Orlando and then came back to Phoenix, and we're standing there in the lines at Disney World or something, and my mom said, I hate this heat. I would take Phoenix heat over this heat any day of the week. So it's just very low humidity, and it's really, really hot, but it's just, trust me, I take dry heat over humid heat any day of the week. So
you don't sweat when it's 120 degrees in the desert.
You do, but it's a dry sweat. It's really
That's what I'm talking about. What is that?
It's different. No, I mean, it's just hot. If many of you have been in Phoenix, I'm sure in the summer, it's really, really hot, but it's a dry heat. And we joke about it, but the fact is, it really was a dry heat. But you know what? I don't even care about Phoenix anymore. I hate the weather. I'm glad to be out of there. I'm a Springfield rain man now. So that's right. Could I talk about the Sun Devils for just a minute?
Sure.
I will just add this.
The leading of the
Spirit. The head of our, the chairman of our board right now that's carrying quite a load there at the church is a big ASU fan, and he has season tickets. So 2 years ago, one of our little guys in our youth group grew up to be a real big guy, and his senior year of high school, he was 310-pound, rated number one or two in the state on the defensive line. So he went to ASU on a full ride. He had offers to Texas and, all over the place. Notre Dame wanted him, and UCLA, USC, et cetera. But he chose ASU, and I'm a big ASU fan right there in Tempe, Arizona, kind of near where we're from. And so Jared, the head of the board, had these tickets. Well, once John Hargis was on the line of ASU, I mean, I just wanted to go to any game I could, and I go to bed really early on Saturday nights. That's before we had a Saturday night service. So I just typically never went to games, but Jared said, you know, do you want to go? And so I was willing even to sacrifice in those 5 or 6 weeks. I'd go to bed really late, and still God would still use me Sunday morning somehow, kind of a thing. But anyway, he took me to the games, and Jared is the name, and he just cracked up because they used this sign. I know it's horrible, but this is different than a Sunday morning. Is that correct?
Tonight? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So anyway, we just do this sign. You know, it's a Sun Devil sign. I know that's horrible, but that's what we do. And so you're chanting, and one side of the stadium, it's like, you know, 60,000 people, go, and then the other side, Devils, go Devils. So I'm just going crazy. And my board member sitting there, he said, he just sat down and watched me. He said, this is the funniest scene I've ever seen in my life, you know. So anyway, I never did get to share that with the church there, but all of you understand within context. How many know when you study scripture, it's
context.
All context, right?
Yes.
So within context, I could scream devils and make a devil sign and do it to the glory of God. I could still do that somehow, all right? So that's
awesome.
That's right. It's an earthly carnal.
It's got like hermeneutics and sports all wrapped into one. It's
Paul really, did that a lot. So run the race. The race with perseverance.
You know, being 18 years in one place, one pulpit, I am sure at some point you've just had a pretty embarrassing moment in the pulpit. And I'm just wondering if you can reflect. Of course, we've all had those moments. Never. But I'm sure you've probably had a few, and you've probably had one, maybe, but not a few. But if maybe you can reflect on something that you either said, something that happened to you, a strange, strange experience.
This is where I regret Carla not being here tonight because she's got him. She'd have him just like that off the top of her head. I know I've said really dumb things because anybody that speaks publicly, you get your tongue tangled at times, but. I cannot remember any of them right now, but I know I've said some winners. If Carla was here, and I apologize, she's back. She'll be back again because of our youngest daughter. She's back home now. But not long ago, actually going up the stairs, I just tripped and fell flat on my face. That was encouraging.
Other embarrassing right moments. Service. This is good. Let's just go there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how about when your business administrator is receiving the offering? And this happened not long ago, so it wasn't me, but if I could tell that. And Rick is one of the dearest brothers, Air Force, retired Air Force weatherman. And matter of fact, he gave me a 5-day forecaster little thing when we were coming here, so that was nice. He loves weather. He would love Springfield right now. He would just eat this up. But Rick got up not long ago and said we need to bring the whole tithe to the whorehouse instead
gosh.
Of the storehouse. So that went over really pretty good. And so anyway,
wow,
that was one of our favorites as I was leaving. We talked about that one, yeah. But and how many of you know that's not biblical? Okay, it's, yes, the storehouse, the storehouse. So bring the whole tithe to the storehouse.
I'm so not ready for that one. Oh my gosh.
Well, this is Wednesday night.
It is.
Real life conversation with real people about real, very real Christ. So that So that wasn't my own. I can't own that, but I can sure enjoy it.
Oh, man. That was good. Well, you mentioned that Carla wasn't able to be here, and I know you deeply regret that. When you think about, I know probably some people heard during the Q&A back during the candidating Sunday, but maybe explain how you and Carla met and how that all of that kind of transpired and your journey together there.
Wow. Well, I left CBC midterm. Matter of fact, Dr. Dan Crabtree and I were in school together, and I left in December. I was really antsy to get out in the ministry and actually had an offer to be at Parkcrest in those days in 1983 and to go to AGTS. And that's what I was planning to do. And then through some unique circumstances, the Lord opened up Phoenix. So I ended up in Phoenix. I was single. It's a miracle, you know, to leave Bible college single practically, but I did. And I arrived at a large church, Phoenix First, which was a really large church, and I hated being single in the ministry, especially at a good-sized church. I kept getting invited. I would go to lunches, you know, with these people and come to find out they had a daughter, you know, a year younger than me, and she would be right there across, you know, at the table and be like, oh, now I know why we're having dinner. They don't care about me. They just want me to meet their daughter kind of thing. So it was a little bit awkward. And Mother's Day of 1984, so I'd been there about 4 months and arrived in January. So, yeah, by May, I met Carla, and let's see, I called her the following, well, actually she came to our graduation banquet that I'm going to be at Friday night for our Central graduates, and so I was doing my first graduation banquet. I had Snow Peabody, who's the Teen Challenge director, as our speaker, let's see, I met Carla, and she really caught my eye, and I called her on Monday, and I said, this is Jeff, and to which she said, Jeff who? And that made me feel really
good. That's
encouraging. And, but anyway, from there we met, and we were married rather rapidly, I would say.
How long was the...
None of your business, but
okay.
It was...
Right.
No,
that's
kidding.
Fine.
Actually, my girls now know, so through the years. But anyway, we were actually married about 7 months later, so it was a pretty quick relationship. But I was done with school. I was youth pastoring. I was in my career of ministry, you know, and so we were married. It's been 25 years, and I have a very soft-spoken, very quiet-natured wife, but I'm telling you, she's a gold mine. She's just, Carla is wonderful. She runs really deep in her heart, in her spirit. She's just a really, really sweet lady.
25 years?
25 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we spent it just, yeah.
It's awesome. Now, and I think, is Michaela here tonight?
Mick is in the
Student Center. Okay. Yeah. Whitney, Michaela, Aubrey.
Right.
You know, I'm sure over the time you guys have probably taken some vacations together, I thought maybe you just talk about one of the more memorable vacations that you've had and why. Why is that?
We did a Disney cruise, and that was incredible. It's probably one of the best vacations I think we ever took. The girls were about 13, 11, and 9, and what a perfect age to take them on a Disney cruise. So down the Caribbean, and it was incredible. And we didn't pay a dime. Friends took us on that. That's what made it so wonderful. Friends took us. We probably would not have done that, but they took us on a
Disney cruise. Would you do that again if someone paid for you to go?
On a Disney cruise?
Sure.
Yeah, I guess so, but now I'm kind of over the Mickey Mouse stage a little bit, you know, and the girls.
Are you?
But slightly.
Okay.
Slightly. I'm into Sun Devils, you know, I do that kind of thing. But no, who would turn down a cruise? So sure.
Sure. Okay. Well, I just thought I'd
Thanks,
throw that
Mike,
out
for
there.
Throwing that. That's
no
incredible.
Problem. You know, I'm just trying.
Who knows
to
what God
put
will
some
do?
Bait on the hook. You know, whatever. Well, awesome. Well, okay.
Does
so
he do this to everybody? Is this how this works? Here?
Someone said yes.
Yes.
okay. So you've got Jeff Peterson, and of course we know it's one person, but you know, most people will learn 90% about you from, at least at first, what they see on the platform. So I'll just call that Jeff Peterson, the pastor. Now, part of the goal for tonight is to talk about Jeff Peterson, the person, and your journey. And I just, you know, your day off, no pressure. You're not even preaching up, you know, for the Sunday coming up or anything. So the pressure's off. What does Jeff Peterson do for fun?
On a day off.
On a day off.
I gave up golf about 15 years ago, and someday I will pick it back up. So I play once in a while, but due to time and money, I decided the girls at their ages, this is crazy. It just eats too much of the day. So actually, I love to, which will fit great here, I love mowing grass. I love the smell of cut grass. I love trimming the border with it, you know, and having a headset on listening to sports talk or Rush Limbaugh.
Okay.
That's like a perfect few hours for me. And quite honestly, I love being with Carla. So when I go to the mall, I have a thing called mall leg that I get. That's like a disease that when I hit the mall, I can barely walk. I mean, it's really bad.
That's good.
So, I will tend to kind of, after a while, I kind of lose it, and she keeps going. And Carla loves to shop and loves, although she doesn't buy a lot, but she loves just to browse and not do anything with it. Drives me crazy. But so I just like to get one thing so we feel we accomplish something with the day. But I honestly, for us, it's been Fridays, and I think that's really been a blessing. Basically, 6 day week, and I'd have that one day a week, and I love to be with my wife, and that is typically our day. So it's a lot of time with Carla usually. But I'll a lot of times do housework. I get it much earlier than her, and I'm rather type A, so I have plenty of things to do while she's getting herself up and moving, and then we a lot of times we'll do stuff in the day. Love to get with friends, love to do game nights, play cards with friends and things like that.
Awesome. What are some of your personal pet peeves? You know, when you see something, it just kind of gets on your nerves. Maybe it's
plaid shirts. Let's see. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Oh, that was offensive. Yeah. Pet peeves. Oh my goodness. I hate a towel that is 100% cotton but doesn't absorb. Do any of you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
That's
actually
a pet peeve of mine, where you just wipe and the water remains on you.
It's
never
a sham
understood
wow.
that.
It's
exactly.
You know, I want it to absorb, not
so,
to smear it.
So I'm staying in a little rental house of a teacher that is away. She's in Florida right now, and Nancy Cobal.
Yeah.
Kind of arranges for me. So I've got this month rental, and so I had to go out and buy some towels. And the reason that's on my mind is because I'm feeling them and realizing, nope, that's like a squeegee. I don't want that one.
Yeah.
And then I found, sure enough, I got what I needed, where it literally absorbs the water as you're using it. That matters to me.
That matters. Okay.
That matters.
Good.
Yeah. Pet peeves. I cannot stand Dallas Cowboy fans. Dallas Cowboys. But the fans are fine. If they love Jesus, it's okay. How many of you are Cowboy fans? Ah, man, it's like a disease. It's like an epidemic in America, I know. But my dad was a Cowboy fan, and I'm a Bears and Cardinal fan.
Okay, yeah. So let's go ahead and rattle off all your favorite teams.
Oh, I love the Chicago Bears, the Chicago Cubs, Chicago Bulls. I love the Phoenix Suns. Matter of fact, could we pause and just pray
because they're
playing
need to
right
pray
now.
For them right now,
Paul. I've been praying, in, you know, underneath my breath
sure.
this whole time.
So. Yeah, it's I got it.
But I love the Suns. I love the Cardinals. Kurt Warner. I've got a Kurt Warner autographed ball in my office, and Kurt Warner's incredible. He was at our church for a funeral just recently, and he made a stir to say the least.
Awesome. I'm affirming that.
Good, thank you.
I had another idea and I didn't want to cut you off. So I'm trying to be a good reflective listener right now. So I just came back from a marriage retreat, so I have all these good things.
Mike,
so
good.
Trying to reflect, listening. I
am not your wife.
I know that, but I'm still trying to. Man, shut up. I noticed during the Q&A, this is totally sidebar, maybe we should save this for the office, but you mentioned that you had Kurt Warner come in for a. For an outreach or something, he came in to do a talk. Maybe you know him, you knew him. He comes. Did he do something at your church at any point? Have you ever seen Kurt Warner personally?
He came for the funeral. That was just not long ago. Yeah, a very tragic moment in our church's
history. That's
what
it was.
But yes, that was probably
okay. So anyway, because a friend of mine and I were talking about what if we could get Kurt Warner here to do anything.
Oh, that'd be incredible. Yeah.
So anyway, that's the whole
actually,
point of that.
Actually, one of our pastor's sons is a 28-year-old young man, really, really sharp guy, and he spends. If you know the Warner family, they have their oldest son that is mentally handicapped. He's about 18 years old. Danny spends time with that boy almost every Saturday, almost the whole day. He just hangs out, takes him to movies, takes him, you know, out. And so there's a huge bond between one of our pastor's right. sons and the Warner's son. So there's a link there. And actually, Warner's came. They live a long way from our church. And the neat thing was, at that funeral, they came away, and they said to Danny, that is one of the most authentic church settings I've ever been in. Which was really a blessing to me, because I loved when I saw this and saw the word real three times. That is a goal of mine, and I sensed that in Pastor Jim Bradford when I met Jim and shared some with Jim over the phone. And I would love, not to sidetrack too much, but just, you know, I sense it a lot here at Central, and I would love to see Central be a place that people walked in and said, this is a room full of real Christians, authentic followers of Jesus.
Amen.
Not hypocritical, not clothed in religious garb, you know, and that's like a passion to me. So to hear that from Kurt Warner was really like, wow, you know, because if you know them at all, and some of you don't even know who we're talking about, but he's the quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals, and he just retired and led us to a Super Bowl and really made a turn in the team the last few years. But he, just a fine, beautiful Christian man. And Danny has been in their home so much that he just says he's real. You know, the Warners are genuine followers of Christ, which is really neat.
Awesome. You know, I believe that you lead people with your strengths, but you connect with them through your weaknesses. And that's kind of how people, you know, can connect to your story. And I'm sure that in the upcoming weeks and months and years that we'll hear much about the vision that God is birthing and that he's sort of gestating in your spirit and everything like that. But I thought tonight it'd be great for you to maybe share about some significant either disappointment, event, or hurt that has somehow made you who you are today. And so as you reflect back on, you know, either church life, personal life, or what is it, or whatever, is there some disappointment that you can reflect back on that has helped shape you into who God has made you today?
There are numerous, there are so many, especially almost 18 years at the same church, you know, it's just a ride, and thankfully to us, our ride, you know, went like this, and we grew, and God really blessed the church through the years. But many of you here that are ministry right now or a ministry background know it's just, it's two steps forwards, one step back. The worst year of my ministry life would be 1997. It's almost hard even to describe. To put it in a nutshell, we had been there 5 years. We were just building a building, and the church we came to was 120 seniors, retirees. Our children and the youth pastor's children were the only ones in the nursery. A big day in kids' church was 11 or 12 kids, and the rest were seniors, and that was 120 people. That's the church that we took. And no landscaping, an older building. It's called Red Mountain Christian Center, and 6-7 months in, I had lunch with a guy. Anyone that walked in the door that was under the age of like 40 or 50, I was like glue on them, you know, and they couldn't get out the door without dragging me. I was just trying to talk to them, et cetera. Well, this is one of those guys, and I took him to lunch, and he said, you know, word on the street, you kind of know what the nickname is of your church. And I said, no, what is it? And he said, Dead Mountain Christian Center. That's great, you know. So that was really encouraging after about 7 months. But we knew that, and we felt that, and it was a burden. And I will never forget our first year there. There were three sets of pews in this little, the old sanctuary, and I literally just walked the mornings. And I had said to Carla, I was 30 years old, and I said, honey, we will give this thing a year, and we'll just say, God, we'll give it our best shot, and you know, if it doesn't turn around or something, I don't know where we'll be after that. But we committed, and we did that year, and then 17 and a half, almost 18 years later, it's a great church today. It's a good church. So anyway, but 97, we were building then our first building, which was going to include with it landscaping for the first time. If you can picture that in Arizona, it was just, but there was no landscaping, a little patch of parking lot, asphalt, otherwise all dirt and just some scattered gravel. And that was the building, and that's what we came to. So in 97, we were building a really nice stucco, up-to-date, modern-looking building with parking lot landscaping. It was going to just change our look. We were on a major seven-lane road there, Power Road in East Mesa. And so that year in 97, we moved in July. So if you can kind of chronicle this with me. In the spring, one of our board members came to me and said, I'm going back to the Catholic Church. And his wife was my secretary and receptionist for 5 years. And he wanted her to remain in her position, which was really awkward, as they were going to Mass every weekend, that she'd be answering our phones, hello, Red Mountain Christian Center, Spirit-filled Church, or whatever. So that was kind of weird. But that happened in the spring. We moved in the building in July. We dedicated it July 23rd. The very next night is a board meeting. And one of the board members walks in and hands me an envelope at the very start of the meeting and says, would you please read this before the meeting? I open it up, and he's resigning off the board. And with him were about four other couples, and there were different issues and complaints they had. But interesting enough, they ended up at a growing, incredibly strong Calvinistic church in the East Valley, which was just strange to me. Over some of the conversations I'd had with them, of all things, they ended up there. So about five families went in the summer with them, and then we come to the fall. This is a church now that's running about 500 in attendance. We'd grown up to about 500 at that point. And in the fall, one of our dear ladies that ran the Koinonia Bible Study, which was our main women's Bible study, Thursday mornings, about 30 ladies or so were there, and she had suggested that I get away to really hear from God. And I said, you know, that's a great idea. I just need to get away, and this has been a killer year. And many of you know, if you've ever built a building in ministry, especially of that level, and I was 35 years old. I mean, I was pastoring, and then at night I'm tying off rebar, and we're using ice block and pouring the concrete in. And so it was the longest year of my life. Wow. And you've got three little girls at home, and you're just trying to balance all this. And so the spring, one turns Catholic. The summer, about four families leave. The fall, this woman says, you need to go, you know, get away with the Lord. So I go up to a cabin to do it. I arrive there in about a 60-mile drive up to Payson, 60 minutes or so. Call my secretary just to say, I'm here. I've arrived. The next 20 or 36 hours, I don't want any calls. I'm just going to shut everything down. I'm just going to, you know, I'm just me and God. And she says, I think I might want to tell you one thing, Pastor, before you do that. And she said that this women's study group leader had gotten up and read her resignation from our church and stated that we are becoming a seeker church, which was almost comical. The furthest thing on God's green earth of what we were because she didn't even know what one was, is what I realized. Right. And so she read it to 30 ladies without even coming to me and announcing it. So in the course of that year, it was the most earth-shaking year. While you're celebrating the growth and what God is doing and we're finally moving forward, it was just one blow after another in the course of that year. And I look back, and that we made it through that year, I look back, honestly, and there's other things in between, but I look back and I know that God forged character, stick-to-itiveness,
right.
Perseverance, all of that in me. And then, after that, our church began to grow in a way. It just grew about 100 people every year for the next several years, and it was really exciting. But I honestly think that that in some ways it was a healthy thing.
Right.
But to us, you know, it was painful. Very painful. Yeah. So
that
gives you a little window in 1997.
Yeah. Thank God He's continued to work and grow that church, and it is a wonderful church. You know.
It is. Yeah.
What do you see as some of the greatest missional hurdles of, let's just say, American culture in general? I mean, there's obviously the church is, of course, on the decline in a lot of denominations. And I'm just curious what your perception and just maybe what your sort of lens and how you look at it and everything. What do you see as some of those hurdles that the church in general is having with the culture? Maybe some of those hurdles, what are some of the issues and things that you think are contributing to that?
Sure. Well, I think there's many. One to me that would be huge would be I think that our the credibility that we lost in the 80s, the front of People magazine, PTL Club, all the things, Jimmy Swaggart, et cetera, I think that is something I really believe that played into some of the DNA, I think, of our culture that just said, see, it's not real, it's fake, it's all about money, you know.
Right.
So between moral, any kind of moral issue and financial issue, I think the loss of integrity in that season. I think now is kind of coming home to roost. But our cultural, just the entire cultural shift from the sexual revolution of the 60s, I think, on into the 70s, and you know, where we are today, it's changing so rapidly. For years, I've said that I think the generational gap is widening more rapidly than ever before. And I really felt that about 15, 20 years ago. I said that when I came to Red Mountain as a multi-generational church. I was really concerned and very, very keyed in on that. And I think now it's even more so because of technology. So, you know, the younger generation today, to me, they've got a bag full of goods that they could just pull out any number of things against our faith, against Christianity. And I think Lee Strobel has served us well, you know, from the Josh McDowell, Evidence Demands a Verdict, to the modern day Lee Strobel and others that have tried to help us with apologetics. Do you have an apologetics class? Do we have here?
We do, actually.
Yeah, wonderful. I think that's vital that we at least be able to defend our faith in a reasonable manner. But, you know, to me, they need to see real, genuine Christians that are not behind a religious facade, but are willing to be honest and real. And you know, I'm one, you will hear me admit freely that I sin. Is that okay?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I will sin on occasion, and I will go back to communion and celebrate that my sins are covered. Do any Amen. Of you do that?
Only
glad for four
half.
Of us here tonight. That's wonderful. But I still have a flesh and a fallen nature that that wars Galatians 5 and 6 with the Holy Spirit within me. And so I think to be genuine and real, and not to wear it as a badge, but yet to be honest with who we are. But we have the one answer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the power that Jesus, the sacrifice of the Son of God on the cross for the forgiveness of our sins.
That's right.
It's the centrality of the cross, and that still is a message we have to come back to. But I think in the church today, probably our greatest hurdle is just being real, genuine people that love Jesus and yet do it in a way that is, you know, that's just not cloaked with a garb of religiosity. I think that's our biggest thing.
Yeah.
At the same time, I will say this, and I just started a little book by, he's now pastoring Dr. Kennedy. It's his son-in-law. If any of you would know the name of the book, anyone? It's regarding being relevant in today's culture. I just started it, but I think he's really hitting the nail on the head, though, in the few pages I've read. But there's a side of me that I'm concerned that the church is trying to do so much to be relevant that we're no longer even like the church. I don't know what we are then. And in some ways, you know, we can seek to be relevant in that we are understanding and embrace a culture and speak to a culture, but at the same time, we are aliens on this planet. We don't belong to this world. Though we're in it, we're not of it, et cetera. And so I do think the church has to be careful to, in any way, to compromise, but even in the gospel, but beyond that, seeking to be so relevant that we just lose our power. And so I think that's what he's written this book on, which I think is really good. But by the same token, I think that the world out there, you know, we need to be able to go out of these walls and engage a neighbor and just love on them. And I really believe in relational evangelism. And I know I kind of know some of the history here. I know Dr. Watson was very strong on personal evangelism. That's critical, you know. And I, you know, to me, it's very important on a Sunday morning when we worship that we know that we are a part of, careful in the theology of this, but God inhabits the praises of his people. So that we are a part of an encounter with God, but I always have in mind as I'm worshiping him, I want his kingdom rule to come into our midst so that the outsider may come in. It may be foreign, and holiness to an unholy person will always be abrasive a little bit, will be a struggle, but that the presence of God will envelop them to where even though it's foreign and different, they will be drawn and they will want what we have.
Yeah, thank God.
I want that so much. And I have enjoyed, I've had two Sundays of central worship, and I have loved what Pastor Tom and Elizabeth and the whole music department brings here. And I just would encourage you, I think part of our priesthood is to minister unto the Lord in worship, but also I believe that's an evangelism tool for the unsaved that may be here. that they sense God is in this place.
Yeah,
there is something here, and I believe He will draw them.
Yeah.
But it's a part of our place as priests to worship Him. I believe.